Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. In this podcast, we'll explore how the attacks on skeptics of man-made global warming are similar to those against proponents of intelligent design. We'll look at the increasing frequency in which labeling and name-calling are used to dismiss critics of the so-called consensus view, and, based on his experiences being attacked as a proponent of ID, the Discovery Institute's Casey Luskin will offer tips to the latest targets as to how to deal with the likely coming attacks. Casey, a recent Washington Post article seemed to tackle both ID and global warming recently. What stood out to you about the piece, and what does intelligent design and global warming have to do with one another?
This is an interesting phenomenon, an interesting development we're seeing in this debate, in that I think that ID and global warming, or at least skeptics of the consensus view in both of those fields, are starting to be attacked in the same kinds of ways. The biggest indicator of this is the fact that the National Center for Science Education, which for years really focused its mission on trying to censor criticisms of Darwinian evolution from public schools, has now expanded its mission to also include trying to enforce a particular viewpoint on global warming. Before I go any further, I want to say, I don't consider myself necessarily a confirmed skeptic of the view that human activity is causing global warming. I'm very open to that viewpoint. However, I am a proponent of free speech, and I think it's very important to have free speech on these very controversial scientific questions. So again, I think that you don't have to necessarily agree with a viewpoint always to think that it deserves to be heard and it deserves to have academic freedom. And so the development that we're seeing here is that academic freedom for dissenters from global warming and dissenters from Darwinian evolution are being marginalized. And really, in some cases, they're being censored in many of the same ways.
Isn't it, and this is a personal observation, but doesn't it also seem to you that the intent of those who are questioning maybe the dominant scientific view out there is also being challenged, as though there's somehow an evil intent on their part to challenge what they see as the evidence, and so it leaves others unwilling to consider this alternative point of view?
That's right. Defenders of the consensus in both of these fields, they're always trying to say that dissenters have evil motives. They're always trying to marginalize them as ignorant or fundamentalists or extremists or wackos. Scientific debate has gone out the window as far as the defenders of the consensus viewpoint go. And so this is concerning to me because I think that these kinds of important questions, they should be settled by the science, not by rhetoric. And as soon as you start to see rhetoric being substituted for scientific arguments, I think that's a red flag that there's something wrong here and we ought to allow free speech.
What are some of the common challenges to skeptics of man-made global warming facing that you see ID proponents or sympathizers of intelligent design face?
Well, again, I think in both cases, we're seeing that dissenting viewpoints are being marginalized and censored. And a lot of money, you want to talk about people with quote unquote, ideological motives, huge amounts of money are being poured in by big science in both of these debates to try to squash and censor scientific views, especially when it comes to public schools. So that's another commonality when we see that big science is pouring in lots of money to make sure that these dissenting viewpoints on global warming and Darwinian evolution are not being exposed to students in public schools. So yeah, this is definitely a battle, in my view, that comes down to free speech. And in both of these fields, sort of the dissenting views are fighting for academic freedom and free speech. And I think that's the main commonality there.
Even though you're not a confirmed skeptic, you seem sympathetic to the idea that these guys are being attacked in the same way. What kinds of advice would you give to those under fire for not buying into quote-unquote consensus with the National Center for Science Education?
We've been dealing with the NCSE for years, for better or for worse, and we're very, very familiar with their kind of approach. So I came up with four or five tips that I would give to skeptics of global warming now that they get to enjoy being attacked by the NCSE on a regular basis. So my first tip is to expect to face a condescending tone with lots of sneers and name-calling. And they should also be prepared to use NCSE rhetoric to their own advantage. We're all familiar with these kinds of sneers, things like anti-science or denier, ignorant, dishonest, science abusers, fundamentalists, anti-intellectual, war on science. I mean, we get hit with these same kind of smears that they're now hitting global warming skeptics, or at least man-made global warming skeptics with. We've been familiar with these for a long time. We're very used to dealing with this. And I think when you face these kinds of attacks, don't take it personally. On the contrary, be encouraged. If your opponent had something useful or something logically compelling to say, they would be saying it. Instead, they're attacking you personally and trying to stereotype and caricature you. So when you hear these kinds of attacks, that's a good sign that you've actually made a good argument. And another important thing to keep in mind when you're being attacked like this is to keep in mind who your audience is. Look, you're not trying to convince folks at the NCSE. They're not necessarily convincible. You're trying to convince normal, open-minded, reasonable people in what you might call the undecided middle. And for the record, those kinds of people don't respond well when they see people using name-calling, personal attacks, and nasty rhetoric. And so actually, in a lot of cases, when the defenders of big science come out and start using these kinds of personal attacks, it actually works against them when dealing with the average person, even the average scientist, that doesn't have an agenda, that's just trying to seek truth.
Who can forget the example of the big political debate between Al Gore and George W. Bush back in 2000? Remember when Gore sighed and walked over and kind of looked disgusted? The general public was upset because they don't like to see that kind of personal animosity, and some think it may have cost him the election.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was doing my graduate studies then, and I was in like this academic black hole, not aware of the outside world, so I wasn't even aware of that
example.
Take
my word for it. The American people don't like people getting personally negative. That's right.
I believe that. Since I've come out of the black hole, I've experienced that many times. So again, you know, realize that the average person out there who's watching these debates, they're not angry, they're turned off by negativity. And so just stay positive, stay focused on the science, and don't fall prey to these name-calling tactics. And I think that will resonate with folks. Another tip that I would give to folks out there in the global warming debate is expect the NCSE to try to paint you as a fringe extremist. But you should also be prepared to show that they are actually the ones in the minority. When you look at polls on this kinds of debates, the public overwhelmingly supports free speech and even teaching students about different viewpoints on these issues in public schools. So as soon as the NCSE tries to paint you as if you're the one in the minority, remind them of poll data which shows that the public overwhelmingly wants to see free speech and intellectual freedom on these topics. In the debate over evolution, we're very familiar with this. We've seen polls that show that over 80% of even self-identified Democrats and liberals support teaching the strengths and weaknesses of Darwinian evolution in public schools. I would imagine it's probably similar statistics when you look at global warming. Again, most folks out there, they're not ideologues. They want free speech on these topics. And one of the things that I think people don't realize in this debate is that one of the things that got the NCSE pulled them into the global warming debate was that in 2009, it was the State Board of Education in Texas that adopted a standard that required teaching scientific criticisms of global warming. Well, guess who actually proposed that standard? It was one of the most left-leaning Democrats on the State Board of Education, a very nice lady actually named Mavis Knight. I remember her well from those debates. So just because somebody's a Republican or a Democrat does not mean that they don't necessarily want free speech on this topic. So I think it's the NCSE that's in the minority on these kinds of issues.
Yeah, just as dissent is not always unpatriotic, dissent is not always extreme either. You can have differing points of view. What about if your opponents can appeal to more authorities than you can? And I know you've experienced this. What's your advice for that circumstance?
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of people, when they hear these appeals to authority, if folks out there that don't necessarily understand how science works, this might initially sound very compelling to them. You know, oh, it's the consensus view. Well, there's no question that the majority of scientists probably do accept man-made global warming, and the majority of scientists probably do accept Darwinian evolution. We never said anything different than that. You know, we never said that there's a majority of scientists that dissent from Darwinian evolution. That's the whole point. We're the dissenting group. And I think in both the cases of global warming and the debate over evolution, we see that there is sort of a critical mass of credible scientists who do dissent from the consensus view. And that shows that you can't just dismiss their viewpoint because they're not in the consensus. And Jeannie Scott with the NCSE, she has said many times that science is not a democracy. Well, we actually would agree with her, but not necessarily for the reasons that she's saying it. She's right in a sense that she doesn't realize, because in science, it isn't the votes that count, it's the evidence. So my tip to folks who are dealing with these sort of appeals to authority is to remind folks at the end of the day, only the evidence can decide these debates. It's not going to be about vote counts. It's got to be about looking at what the data tells you and making your decisions based upon that. Don't ever believe something because somebody else is telling you to believe it. Investigate it, look into it for yourself, come to your own opinion, keep the debate focused on the evidence.
And speaking of the evidence, sometimes there's the phenomenon that you refer to as citation bluffing. How should people watch out for that?
That's another one of my tips, is to always double check the references of your opponents, because sometimes the other side will engage in citation bluffing. No, I'm not recommending that you engage in citation bluffing. That's really not a good thing to do. It's always important, though, to be able to cite scientific studies to back up your viewpoint. And when you do that, make sure that they actually do back up your viewpoint. Now, we've experienced in the debate over evolution that Darwin defenders are famous for citation bluffing. They'll throw out a long string of impressive sounding papers, and then when you actually go and dig up those references, you'll find out that those papers didn't necessarily make the strong points that they claimed they did. Or if they do make those points, there's often other arguments and other scientific papers that have expressed a different viewpoint. And so you need to be ready to go out into the literature and know about what it says and be able to say, look, there's debate on this. There's other views coming from legitimate peer-reviewed papers. In the debate over evolution, there are literally hundreds of peer-reviewed papers that are challenging core tenets of Darwinian evolution, especially as it's taught in textbooks. So everything that we're saying students should learn is based upon the peer-reviewed literature, and I would assume that folks in the global warming debate would say the same thing.
That concludes this edition of ID the Future. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. If you would like more information or would like to support the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2012, the Discovery Institute. All rights reserved.